we were at where we left off was on Eov chapter 7. We spoke about the question about whether he rejected the resurrection of the dead, but as I mentioned, I don't believe that's what's really happening there. He's just saying he himself is running out of time, and therefore promises that things will get better are hardly comforting. So that was verse 11. The whole bit ends with verse 11, which is Gamani Loechsach Pi, and therefore I won't refrain from using my mouth. I won't shorten the, you know, what comes out of my mouth. Adabra Batsar Ruchi, I will speak with the sorrow of my spirit. Asicha B'Marnashi, and I will, more or less the same words, and I will converse with the bitterness of my soul. And now he turns to God. So from Yud Bet, from what we'll do is verses 12 through the end of the chapter, and there's some very interesting ideas in here. And they're very, some very interesting ideas. So I'm just going to read Yud Bet. Hayam ani im tanin ki tasim alai mishmar. Now right there, that one sentence opens up a whole can of worms. The first thing to notice is that under the hay is a chataf patach. A chataf patach is a question. So it's not hayam, which would be the sea, is spelled with a patach, and there would be a dagesh in the yud. But with a chataf patach, there is no dagesh in the yud, and it's a chataf, with a hay ha-shelah. So it doesn't mean the sea, it means am I the sea? So I'll literally translate the words, and by themselves they seem very confusing. Am I the sea? Am I a snake or a reptile? Ki tashim alai mishmar, that you should place on me a guard. I have a... I tried. Did I miss one? I think maybe that's what happened.
One on top, maybe?
Oh, that's what I did excellent. Wrong. Thank you. Okay, I definitely did something wrong. I have an extra one here. You may want to. So, we're on chapter 7, verse 11. Verse 12. Hayam ani im tanin. Am I the sea or a reptile? Ki tasim alai mishmar, that you're going to put a guard around me? Right there, the question is, you know, what's he talking about? So, how do I want to present this? Just a second. There's a mythological implication here that I've hinted to a little bit, and I'd like to go into it, but you know what? Let me read a few verses first, and then I'll get back to it. Ki amarti tenachameni asi, even if I said my bed will give me rest, yisa v'sichi mishkavi, and my bed will give me some comfort. V'chitatani v'chalomot, I will be frightened of dreams. V'mechazenot tiva'ateni, and you will, v'chitatani, you will break me, or you will fight me with dreams. V'mechazenot tiva'ateni, and you will shake me with visions. V'atibchar mechanak nafshi, and you will choose choking of my soul. Mavet me'atmotai, and death. No, actually, let's try it again. V'atibchar mechanak nafshi, and I would prefer death of my soul. Mavet me'atzmotai, and I would prefer to be dead than to, you know, from my bones. Ma'asti lo le'olam echia, I am sick of this. I do not want to live. Chadal mimeni, leave me alone. Ki hevel yamai, because my days are worthless. So he's now turned away from his friends, and he's turned directly towards God. And here, what we have in chapter 7, and then we'll see more in chapter 9, is some pretty harsh words against God, and therefore they need some understanding. But the first one we need to understand is going back to verse 12. What is he talking about? Am I the ocean or am I a snake that you should put upon me a watch? So here, and I have to apologize for reading Avodah Zarah to you, but I'm going to read a little Avodah Zarah to you. This is called the Baal cycle, and Baal was there's no other way to say it, the son of the supreme God of the ancient Canaanites, before Israel reformed the religion and created monotheism out of it. There was a god called El, who was married to a woman named Asherah, who you've met probably in various stories. And they had a number of children, and one of them was named Baal, who was essentially it was a bull god, who you also probably familiar with as being one of the Avodah Zarah that the Jews got into. And he had a sister named Anat, who was the goddess of war, who later got sort of pulled into Diana, the goddess of war, during Greek and Roman times.
Diana was goddess of
war. Was fertility and war. No, am I wrong? Did I get it wrong?
But I think she might have also been a hunter.
Uh-huh. Right. And then who was the war god for the Romans? It was Aphrodite,
Mars.
Fertility and... Oh, there's a woman also, though, right? And Aphrodite was also a war god, love and war, no? Uh-huh. I believe there was a war goddess also in those. So I just to read to you a little bit of this battle. What happens is Baal wants to be the man. He's not happy being one of many kids. He wants to be the man. So essentially, Yam is a god, not surprisingly, the god of the seas. And Baal wants him dead. So essentially, just to read you just a little bit without reading too much.
What is this from?
This is from the Baal cycle. These were ancient stone tablets. I have some pictures here. That were dug up in northern in Syria on the Mediterranean coast. And they contain on them mythology, ancient mythology of Canaanites. This is essentially the religion that existed before Avram turned everything around. Unfortunately, I don't have a book with the actual tablet of the Baal cycle. And there are about 15 or 20 tablets that they found, and there are repeats on them, and they tell various stories of this guy, of the battles of the gods, like you may have read from Greek times. In fact, they affect Greek mythology much more than they affect Hebrew mythology, Jewish mythology, but we'll see they affect our mythology also. So, let me read to you the battle of Baal against Yam. Thy name, even thy name, is Expeller. Expeller, expel Yam. Expel Yam from his throne. River, that is another name for Yam, was river, from the seat of his sovereignty. Thou shalt swoop from the hand of Baal like an eagle from his fingers. Strike the shoulders of Prince Yam. Twixt the hand of Judge River. Judge River was another name for Yam. The club swoops from the hand of Baal like an eagle from his fingers. It strikes the shoulders of Prince Yam. Twixt the hands of Judge River, Yam is strong, he is not vanquished, his joints do not fail, nor his frame collapse. In the next pace, he actually smacks him until Yam sinks and falls to the earth. Of course, Yam is not completely down and out, so it comes back later, and I will read to you some interesting stuff, which is as follows. And we shall poise Baal, and it shall surely load him on thee. Besides, thou didst smite Lotan. Lotan is Leviathan, the evil serpent. Right, Lotan would be spelled Lamed Vav Tuf Nun. Leviathan, the evil serpent, didst destroy the crooked serpent. That's Nachash Akalaton, which you may recognize from our text, the mighty one of seven heads, etc., etc. So this is ancient mythology, which preceded. And literally preceded the development of the Jewish religion, what Abraham essentially when they were talking about when Nahor was living up in Aram Naharaim, this is the Bubot that he was worshiping. What's interesting though is when we think of Yam, when God says He creates the Yam, we don't think of it as a god at all. We think of it as the ocean. And there is some significance to Leviathan, but we think maybe just a creature of the sea. It's not really clear what it is, but these things aren't really given, they're not personified. They're simply God split the seas. Except that's not always true. If you take a look at the first source in Yeshayahu, Perakov Zion, so I'll read to you from Yeshayahu Chavzayin. Yeshayahu talks about a lot of stuff. Yeshayahu speaks about the Bereshit. There's a lot of Bereshit symbolism. So on Chavzayin Aleph it reads like this: Bayomahu yifkod Hashem b'charbo hakashava gdola v'chazaka. On that day, God will take His sword, the hard, the strong, and the hard, Vachazaka, and the great, Al Leviathan, on the Leviathan, Nachash Bariach, there's the Nachash, Va'al Leviathan, Nachash Akalaton, and there's the snake of the hinges, and the snake of the curved serpent, Vaharag et Atanin, Asher Bayam, and he will kill the Tanin, which is in the ocean. Now here, Yam is not personified. These are just creatures that live in the sea. And this appears to be in messianic times, or sometimes a salvation, where God will wipe out this sort of evil creature of that symbolizes evil forces. Now I'd like to take a look at the second source, which is Yeshayahu Mem Aleph.
In the
Shishi
Alisar, so what is the evil that's the Tanin?
The Tanin, yeah, that's the thing that Hashem will wipe out. Mm-hmm. It's a very bad.
Why
anybody?
Is Hashem wiping out these creatures?
Well, that's a good question. We'll get there in a second. But in Kabbalistic, of course, you probably know all the Kabbalistic ideas, which is that there was the Leviathan, which God will feast on during the times of Mashiach, and it sort of personifies the evil on earth. So let's take a look at Mem Aleph, because that's not really what the original symbolism was meant. It wasn't Kabbalistic at all. I'll show you exactly what it is. Mem Aleph Pasuk Tet.
Nun Aleph or Mem Aleph?
Sorry, Nun Aleph. Nun Aleph, I'm sorry. Yeah, Nun Aleph is right, 51. Let me turn to the right place. Nun Aleph Pasuk Tet. Uri, Uri, Livshi Oz. Wake up, wake up. Dress in strength. Zeroah Hashem, the hand of God. Uri Kmei Kedem, wake up like in the days of old, Dorot Olamim, in those olden generations. Halo Athi Hamachsevet Rahav, you're the one who crushed Rahav. Micholelet Tanin, I want to say destroys, although it's not exactly right, destroys the Tanin, this creature. Halo Athi Hamcharevet Yam, you're the one who dries up the sea. Mei Tehom Rabah, the great, great waters of the deep, Hashama Mamke Yam, Derech Lavur Gulim, and you create an Amek, a valley in the water, in order for those who are saved to be able to walk through. The imagery, it's still talking about salvation, because that's what Yeshayahu is talking about, but the imagery, the word Tehom and the word Yam start to bring on the imagery of Bereshit, the idea of splitting the seas. What happens in Bereshit? The water is covering the face of the earth. Vayikavu amayim, and the water is gathered together so that the land comes forward. Now I'd like you to take.
Here he's not talking about Mitzrayim. Rahav is often referred to.
Rahav is the god of Mitzrayim. Yeah, but no, Mistam.
And they split the sea.
Mem kiyam derech lavor yulim.
Yeah, there is a remedy. Sure, that salvation does reflect back on the splitting of the sea of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Absolutely. Now let's take a look at Mishlei, where it's not talking about Mitzvah Yitzhak Mitzrayim. This is Mishlei Chet, which is right there for you. I just want to turn to it, because without the vowels, Mishlei is particularly difficult to read. Pasuk Vav. The idea here is that the Moshel is trying to get people to listen to God's wisdom, proving that God is the God who made everything, and therefore his wisdom is worth listening to. Ad lo asa eretz v'chutzot, before there was any land, v'rosh afrot tevel, before there was any place for inhabitable areas, b'achino shamayim sham ani, as I was in my preparations of the heavens, b'chuko chug al pnei tahom, when I put limits on the great waters, b'amso shechakim imal, as I pushed away the waters above. Remember, there were two sets of waters. They're the above waters and they're the below waters that were separated by the Rakia. Ba'azuz inot tahom, that I pushed away the inot, maybe the eyes, the wellsprings of the tahom. Besumo layam chuko, I limited the ocean. Umayim lo ya'avru piv, so that the water could not cross what I commanded. Bechuko mosdei aretz, and by pushing away the water, I created the land. The next pasuk actually, which I don't have, is how the inhabitable land was created. And the final one, so what you're getting an image of here is that God is separating the waters in order to allow people, in order to allow habitations to take place. In fact, that's what happens in Bereshit. The reason why God's draws up the waters is that people could, that there's dry land for people to live on. That's the imagery that you're seeing here, that somehow by God limiting these waters, human civilization can proceed. The final one, of course, is famous. This is the one we say on, this is Baruch Hinashi, this is Kuf Dalet. Let me just open up to, this is Tehillim Kuf Dalet, which we say every Rosh Chodesh. It's worth reading all of it, but I've just taken a small section, starting from verse 5, because it really gets to the point. Yasad ha'aretz al mechoneha, he established the land on its base, bal timot olam va'ed, that it should never be cast aside, tahom kalvush ksito, he wore the tahom like a cloak, al harim yamdu mayim, actually, ksito, I think in this case, doesn't mean that God wore the tahom, it means that the land wore the tahom. Al harim yamdu mayim, on the mountains there stood water. Min garatcha yinusun, and when you screamed out, the waters fled. Min kol ra'amcha yecha fezun, from your great cry, they were fearful, they ran in fear. Yalu harim, what happened? The mountains came up. Yerdu bika'ot, and the valleys formed. El mekom zeh, to the place, this place, yasadata lahem, that you made for them. Gvul samta bal yavorum, and you made a border for them, that is the waters, that they could not cross. Bal yeshivun l'chasot ha'aretz, that they should not come back and cover the earth. And the rest of it then talks about how life started to flourish and how God created it's the Genesis story. So what you have here essentially is the idea in Genesis, in Bereshit, is that originally the entire world is covered by water and therefore it's uninhabitable, and by God screaming and yelling, the waters separate, and what comes up is the land in between. But as you notice from the first two sections, there God, the Tahom itself, let's go back to those Yishayahu Nunalf. Halo ati am chaveret yam mei Tahom Rabbah, you're the one who dried up the waters. But in the previous pasuk, it talked about the fact that God was destroying the Tanin and the Rahab. So you get the sense of an epic battle. Finally, where I'd like to take you to is, I hope if it's there, I'm pretty sure it's there, it's the very end of Eov, Chaf Chet, Lamed Chet, where God is saying, where were you when I created the earth? That's the famous one. Not the last chapter, it's close to the end, 38. Ooh, it's all over the place, to be honest. Take a look at Pasuk Dalet. Efo Hayita, where were you, Eov, Biyozdi Aretz, when I made the earth? Hageid im yadata bina, tell me if you know what it is to have knowledge. Mi sam mimadeha kiteda, did you give it measurements that you would know something about this? Oy minata aleha kav, and who limited them? Who drew a line to limit where the waters would be, or the land would be? Take a look at Biran Yachad in Pasuk Zayin, Kochve Boker, Vayariu called Bnei Elohim, and all of the angels, Vayariu, probably that they cried out. Vayasech B'dlatayim Yam, and you put into the door the waters, B'gichol Merechem Yetze, B'sumo Anan L'vushovar, Efel Chutuato. Let's go on to the more mythological pieces. Take a look at the part that talks about the Tanin. I'm pretty sure it's here. Oh, am I wrong? Is it not here? Pretty sure it was here. What do you think? I lost it.
They moved it.
Yeah. Or I must have. I have the wrong chapter. There's somewhere else in Eov has it. I thought the Otzor Shalig. I'm sorry. There's this really good part where he's talking about battling these creatures. I'm sorry. I don't see it right now. So what we have here, and I apologize for sort of kind of fluffing it now because I don't have the part where he's actually battling against the Yam and he's battling against the Tanin. Oh yeah, actually, here we have. Look at Pasuk Lamed. Pasuk Lamed.
In 38?
Yeah.
Kevin Mayim
Yitchabau Ufnei Tehom Yitlakadu. How does the English translate Yitlakadu? Ufnei Tehom. The faces of the waters Yitlakadu. They were captured. How is that?
It says it's frozen.
What's that?
And the face of the deep is frozen.
Yeah,
it
forms a solid mass.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah, Lakad is really captured though, not frozen.
Yeah, but it fits with the first part of the puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, the waters are hidden as with a stone.
Yeah, I have some better psukim, and I kind of left them out, and I would have a hard time trying to find them now, where God is actually doing sort of battle with the... I'm trying to think where else it is. You know what? I think maybe Tehillim...
Well, you know, in the next pasuk, it talks about the constellations, finding the chains of the Pleiades...
And yeah. And the Kshil is the Orion. Yeah. Yeah, there is this sense... I'm not really getting it that good, but there is a sense of, like, a physical struggle going on. I'm trying to think of other ones. I think maybe Tehillim. Let me just take a quick peek at Tehillim Ketet. Let me see if I just have a few off the top of my head and see if I can find something good, because they're very nice when you see them.
But you know, there's always a feeling of threat by a restless sea. Even in the Shir Shal Yom for Friday,
Yes. The voice of the seas. Absolutely. I want to find you a few others. I'm not trying to say for a minute, and I want to make sure that I just wanted to find another good one or two. Just a second. I'm not trying to say for a minute that there's one that's worth looking at in Lamed Gimel. It's Kones Kaneid Me'ayam. The waters of the ocean are gathered as a pillar. Notain ba'otzarot Tehomot. And Tehomot were put away in an otzar, in a treasury, that is, so that they wouldn't come out. There are other, I'm sorry, I don't have the other images where God is actually doing battle against the Yam. And I'm not trying to say for a minute, by the way, that we're mythological, or that we believe that the Yam was personified, because what you find is that in almost every case, the Yam is almost non-personified. It's just on once or twice that the personification of the Yam comes up. However, there is the myth that is out of the ancient mythology, the Canaanite mythology, that gave humanistic elements to the water so as to give it some level of control. Because if they had thought and if they were people, we could somehow control them. That was the idea. Let's give everything, let's put a god to it. So Judaism really pushed that away. The Yam was recognized as simply a Yam. And God, the Tanin, or whatever it is things that God has to put away in order for life to exist. However, the old stories maintained, and when Eov was writing it a day, it was probably much later when nobody ever thought that it really, if Eov was written quite late, which I think we believe that it was, during the Babylonian exile, the issues of the ancient Canaanite, that ancient mythology, there wasn't a concern that the Jews would believe in. That wasn't the Jews' problem at that time. The Jews' problem was exile. Yehuda was really the only one left. They were always pretty firm. So the author allowed himself, in order to give some feeling to the book, and keep in mind that the book is a wisdom book that was geared for all peoples, allowed himself a little play with these creatures of the deep. And therefore what you have is God sort of fighting against the Yam and fighting against the Tanin, as if they're the old mythological creatures, not because we believe in the myth, but because it gives you a certain sense of of the epic battle. I think maybe I didn't prove my case too well because I didn't bring the psukim that were strong enough that really showed the epic battles occasionally in Tehillim. But
Mem Chafei, what does that say?
What's that?
Mem Chafei.
Where do you have that?
Eov, Mem Chafei. Shimshuch Leviatan Chaka.
Oh, not Mem. Can't be puzzled.
No, Mem Chafei, Perik Mem.
Oh, Perik Mem Chafei?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some stuff in Tehillim, actually, that's very impressive, and therefore it's usually worth a look. Because in Tehillim and Eov, you could already say, you know, it's the style of Eov. Which one? Chafei.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It's Tzimshoch Leviatan B'Chaka, you're pulling the Leviathan.
That's Eov talking about.
Yes, correct. So you can't prove much. No, that's Hashem talking.
That's Hashem talking. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, this is there's more mythological stuff here. It shows up from time to time. I think in chapter 12, if I'm not mistaken.
What's Agmon?
I don't know.
What's Agmon? The next pasuk chavav. What does it say for Agmon?
How English?
Yeah. English 40.
Man is 40.
Can you put a hook in his nose or bore his jaw through with a bridle ring?
Right. Sounds about right.
40.
But it seems to me that this
25?
Is not really Hashem battling with anything. It's just showing, you know, that there is this tremendous creature and that Hashem is
can treat it like
a puppy, you know, or
press down
whatever you put
forward.
A ring through a bowl, I guess.
Come right.
Down, put a ring into it.
It's just showing that Hashem is in charge.
That's correct. That's
which is what he's trying to impose and press upon. He's saying, you little grasshopper, what do you know?
What's happening though with the Yam is something a little bit different. The Yam and the Tanin were the battles that were done. Whenever you have Yam and Tanin, the idea is that the waters and the Tanin threaten to wipe out civilization, and that God pushes aside the Yam, destroys the Tanin, so that human habitation can exist, so that people can live. Whether it's now, of course, the original story is what we have in Bereshit, where simply Hashem says the whole world was covered by water, and Hashem causes all the water to go away in order for habitation to come up and allow humans to exist. The very opposite of which, of course, happens in the Mabul. The Mabul, the waters come back and destroys all human habitation. So that's a record.
Under Hashem's control.
Absolutely, and not only that, Yam was never personified. It's only in these cases, such as. Again, the ones I brought to you, they have the Tanin, but the Yam is not clearly personified. That last one, Yishayahu Nunalef, it just says, Halohi Hamacharevet Yam, it's rise up Yam. But there, Yam doesn't necessarily mean that it's personified. There are better ones. You could say, perhaps, on Pasuk Zayin, Min Garatcha Yenusun, from your screams it runs away. So there you have a sense that there's something physical to run away, but there's even better ones, which unfortunately I didn't deduce here, where the Yam is actually a creature. And this, again, throws back to this ancient mythology. Let's go back to Eov, because I sort of took us on a long trip around. What Eov is saying, back to Eov Zion Yudbet, he's saying, Hayam ani im tanin, am I the Yam, or am I the Tanin, ki tasim alai mishmar, that you should have to put a guard against me? Now, if you would just look at the mythological elements without looking at the Torah elements, what we're saying is these are the two creatures that the ancient gods fought against, and therefore he's saying, stop fighting against me. Who am I that you should come and beat me up? I'm not worth it. Why? What am I, some type of dangerous creature like the Yam or like the Tanin that you should put me in the mishmar? But if we look at it from a more Jewish perspective, where the Yam and the Tanin, while they may still have a throwback to the mythological identities, they were subsumed into Judaism as a part of understanding that God allows nature to exist and civilization to exist by controlling the uncontrollable forces of nature. That is, God sometimes has to push away one part of nature in order to let humanity exist. What I believe, therefore, Eov is saying, although it's hard to really prove it either way, is he's saying, am I a threat? That is, Mimela, I can understand if I was a crazy banana guy who was shooting at people, or if I was some guy with a terrible disease like an Ebola thing that was going to wipe everybody out. I can understand that if I was a threat to civilization, that you should take care of me. I can understand that. Even if I don't have a sin in me, I can understand that if I'm some kind of threat to civilization, like the Yam and the Tanin were, that God would have to create a mishmar for me, a jail for me, in order to keep me away to allow civilization to thrive. But Eov is essentially saying that I'm none of those things. And therefore, since I'm not a danger to anybody, why do I deserve to be put away? There are two reasons to be put away. One is if you're a sinner, and the other one is for some reason, that is, the ocean doesn't sin. It simply needs to be removed to allow humans to exist. So Eov, I believe, is saying here, listen, you got two choices. Either I sinned, show me, because I don't think I did. Or two is, show me that I'm in some way dangerous, because if I'm not dangerous, there's no reason for you to wipe me out. Eov is sort of recognizing that God would have a motive to punish things even where there was no sin involved, but that he doesn't fit that case. Do you see what? That's the element that I believe is going on here when we take the mythological part of Yam and Tanin and merge it in with the idea that God separates Yam and Tanin in order for civilization to come apart, to come to life. Next time I bring Nether, maybe I'll bring in some better proofs because there's some really nice stuff. But be it as it may. Pasuk Yud Gimel is worth a look because it has the word Eresh in it. Ki Amarti Tanachameni Arsi. He says something very sad, by the way. He says, even if my bed would give me nachum, that is, it would give me some
comfort.
And what that means is, like, if I just go to sleep, I'd be able to forget about my troubles. Sometimes you just need to, turn on the TV and zone out. So it would be sort of like turning on the TV if you're having a really, really bad day, and then you turn on TV and you watch a really sad movie, so it doesn't help at all, So instead of a nice, nice action movie, you catch a really bad, depressing, sad movie.
You forgot about your problems.
What's that? Right. They don't really, though.
Like
they really
video of yourself. Then.
They're really kind of very affecting. So here he's saying, listen, I would love to go to sleep. And Yishav Sichi Mishkavi. Now here the word Sichi is a throwback to the word Sichi is my talking, my communications. But if you take a look at the word Sichi in a previous verse, you'll see what he means. Yud Aleph. Thank you. The sichot that he's talking about is his cries of pain. So he says, even if my bed would carry the pain, which is carry away the pain, you'll send terrible dreams after me. You will scare me off with your visions. I don't know whether that's already happened or whether he's just saying, listen, I can't get to sleep anyway. I mean, I'm so bad that if I close my eyes, I see worse things in my dreams. Or perhaps I could put it this way, to sleep, perchance, to dream. Although here he was talking about death rather than sleep. I don't think that's what Eov is talking about, but Eov is simply saying, I have no escape. I can't close my eyes to the trouble. Another reason why I wanted to mention this pasuk is the word Eres is of note. The word Eres is matched to the word Mishkavi, my bed, and the word Eres usually means sleep. In fact, we say it in Tehillim when we do Tachanun. What do we say? I actually have the pasuk here. Yagati b'anchati, I become wiped out with my groanings. Eschev b'chol laila mi tati, I speak. But as you can see, the speech here is not just the speech. I cry out in pain with every night of my bed. B'dimati, with my tears, arsi amseh, I melt my eres. So an eres is matched up, of course, to a bed. The reason why this is of note, and I thought just as a little aside, is because of the famous Og thing, right? How big was Og? So everybody knows that Og was, I don't know, 800 feet tall, because when Moshe jumped up, he only caught him by the ankle. And Og is the one who was holding onto the ark, to the Teva, in order to survive. So what's interesting is in Devarim it says exactly how big he was. So if you take a look at the pasuk in Devarim, it says, Kirak Og Melech HaBashan, Nishar Miyetar Arfaim. He was the only giant left. Hine Arso Eres Barzel. Now, a lot of people want to translate this as crib. In order to make this come out like the Midrashim, so they say his crib was of this certain height, and therefore his bed was so much bigger, because the crib's not really that big. But as you can see, the word Eres doesn't mean crib. It means specifically bed, unless told otherwise. So Hine Arso Eres Barzel, it was a bed of iron. Halo Hebrew Abat B'nei Amon, it's an Aman. Tesha Amot Orka Varba Amot Rochba Bamat Ish. It was 9 Amot long, 4 Amot wide, but he's very careful here. The problem with an Amah is subject, it's relative to a person. So if it's his Amah, you'll have no idea how tall he is. You see how the Torah is incredibly perfect here. If it said that he was 9 Amot big, so you'd say, I don't know how big he is. All I know is that it's 9 of his Amot. That could be 100, that could be 100 feet long. But it's specifically, the Torah specifically wants you to know how big he is. So it says Ba'amat Ish. So if you do the math, so let's say an average person that was about 5'5", let's just say. First is 5'5", so that comes out to 60, 75 inches. I think an amo, which is usually from the point of my hand to my elbow, is about one-fifth the size of a human being. Is that fair? It's about one-fifth? Is it one-fourth, would you say?
Probably one-fourth.
You think one-fourth? Should we try it?
Well, no, because this is about 18 inches.
It's about 18 inches.
Right.
So if you times by 4...
Four times 4, that's 6 feet.
72, yeah.
Oh, okay, so it's a quarter. Okay, so it's a quarter. So therefore, if we take a quarter of, let's say the average height was 5'5", so that was how many inches was that? So that was 65, right?
Yeah.
It's 75. 65.
65.
5'5".
Yeah, 5.
6, 12, no, it's
5
times 12. 5 saw the 60, and then another 5 inches. Right, yeah. So 65. Well, so let's divide that by 4, and we get how many inches? 16 inches. Now let's multiply that. Let's see how big his bed was. Let's multiply that by 9, and we get, let's say... 144 inches. Now divide by...
12 feet.
So it's 12 feet, which means his bed was 12 feet. Which means he was 12 feet long. Which means he was...
Long.
Rough, amot or ka in length. So it was 12 feet long, which puts him at about 10 feet.
Yeah.
About 10 feet. I could live with that. The Rambam actually goes into it. The Rambam talks it. Morin Avulchim, he says, you should know. Sometimes when the Torah is speaking, it speaks in exaggeration. But here it's speaking specifically, but that shouldn't bother you. So he actually, he says it's well known that beds are always one-third extra the size of a person. I don't know what kind of beds he was sleeping on. I wish I had that kind of space. I wish I had...
Shorter,
what's
that?
They had shorter beds also. So I don't know where the Rambam gets an extra third, to be honest. So the Rambam gives you an extra third, so that gives him... What's that? Yeah, I guess so. Maybe that was it. So that gives you 6 amot length. So that's 6 times... How many inches was it? So instead of 9 times, it's 6 times 18.
That's a third shorter. You want a third longer, so it'd be 3/4.
So it'd be 3/4 the size. Well, a third shorter, I think it's 2/3 the size, no?
Is a third longer or a third shorter?
I'm not sure exactly which way. I'm not sure whether it was calculating outside or inside the Rambam. I think he said it was 1/3 larger than the length of the body.
So
that it's 1/4, so you drop 1/4. So the Rambam comes out to about 8.5-9 feet, which is, he says, certainly davar lo nimna. That's not impossible. Even 10 feet today is not completely impossible. I mean, we got basketball players that are, what, 7'8", 7'9"? That's impressive, you know. So that's only about 2 feet
Marion
short.
Jacobson had a cousin who was 8'3".
What?
Marion Jacobson had a cousin who was had a growth problem. So
I see.
He ended up at like 8'3" when he passed away.
And he probably had other problems because of that.
He couldn't find a bed.
So essentially what you have is Og not being this, humongous creature of our Kabbalistic mythology. He's not 50 feet or 100 feet tall. The Torah takes, it's actually, and interesting enough, Goliath was 6.5 amot long. Based on this average of, base 6.5 amot long is 6 times 18 inches, which is 100 inches, divided by 12, and we get to about 7.5 feet. Okay, so he's about the size of a basketball player, about the size of Andre the Giant. That's not, now if you're 5'5", you're in trouble. You know, that's humongous back then. Even today, I wouldn't want to go against the guy in a sword combat against the guy who's 8. Did you really?
Oh yeah, my father used to take me to all the matches.
Oh no, he was watching him in Princess Bride. He's just a humongous guy.
Oh yeah, no, he walked right by
Andre the Giant. He was a wrestler back in the day. He was a humongous and wide also, so you can see where they're coming from.
He was bigger than the wrestlers.
What's that?
He was much bigger than all the other wrestlers.
Yeah,
he's a big guy.
So here what you get are numbers which are not impossible. It's interesting. It's certainly there may be a miraculous issue involved. It could be these descendants, whatever they are. I've often spoke about the idea of genetic inbreeding or whatever it is. But 10 feet, that's not, we don't have to, have to rewrite the Torah in order to make that happen. It's only when you take the Midrashim seriously and don't pay attention to the Torah, or if you notice that Eres, I don't want to say seriously, we should always take Midrashim seriously. I meant literally, taking Midrashim literally. Because there's a problem. Why do they need to have Og hanging around from the back of the Teva? Because the problem with the fallen giants, that occurs before the flood, and yet they're clearly there after the flood, which means the flood did not wipe everybody out. So the way they do it is they have Og hanging around.
Unlike saying that Og just arose, someone grows taller than everybody else.
Right, but you can't do that, because it says specifically that he was from the leftovers of the Rephaim, and the Rephaim are those people that were before the flood. So how come the flood didn't kill them? So the flood didn't kill, the flood says it wipes out all life. So first of all, rubo kikulo, most is like all. Second of all, if I was 10 feet tall, I'd probably come up with a way to survive the flood also. You know, when I really started raiding 2 or 3 days, and I got 10 feet, so I got at least a few extra, days of survival, so I built a boat.
On another, if the flood wiped out all of humanity, then who did Lot's daughter's sons marry?
Well, that was many generations later. Lot's daughter's sons was 10 generations later.
Noach's daughter. Noach's daughter's sons.
Right. So
the ones they had by Noach.
Right. So then there's inbreeding among cousins, first cousins. Mm-hmm. Right. The husbands and the wives were on the boat. They had a lot of children. you never find out that, you know, the Torah only mentions the boys' names, but there's no doubt that they had girls also. The girls just didn't get any billing. So the first cousins married, and I guess the ones that came out okay. If you want to say, there are those who want to say that the flood was actually localized to the Mesopotamian basin, which is really where most 90% of civilization was at the time. So you had this gigantic flood between the two rivers of the sea. Keep in mind that it never goes to Mount Ararat. That's a mistake. It goes to Hare Ararat. Ararat was the name of a country that was in Turkey, so it floated all the way up to Turkey. If you wanted to, you could limit the flood just to where civilization was. If God wanted to destroy the world, he doesn't necessarily need that basin to be covered. That doesn't fit so well with the fact that the top of the mountains, but you could. It's difficult. I don't want to say that there wasn't a flood. I would rather say that there was a flood, but that why should we think that there are some other enterprising souls, especially the Rephaim, couldn't survive such a thing? I don't think we need Og really, himself on as a 100-foot guy. Og, you can think of it as being figuratively. He attached himself on. He saw what Noah was doing. He hedged his bets. He had a few extra days to worry about it because he was a powerful fellow. And he got all of his family members together and said, I think we're going to build a little boat also. The fact that he doesn't get mentioned by the Torah is because God doesn't want to mention him. It's not key for our understanding of what religion is all about. But it doesn't seem impossible that... That's what happens. Perhaps that's non-traditional view, but I believe it works out a little bit better.
Were the Rephaim descendants of Adam and Chava?
Everybody was descendants of Adam and Chava. Well, and the question is, who were the Bnei Elohim? So that's an old thing that I've spoken about. If you say there were angels, and we get into all kinds of Kabbalistic issues. I want to talk to you about that, but I'll mention it after the class because I was thinking it's right. I'll mention it after the class. Actually, I'll ask you all when we're almost finished. We're 10 minutes away anyway. So I just wanted to mention that Eris does not mean a crib. Eris means a bed, and that gives a new view to Og. So I think it's important to understand that concept, that Og was 10 feet tall, not 100 feet tall. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Yud Zayin. Ma enosh ki tegadlenu ki tashit elav libecha. Now he says something very interesting. What is a man that you should make him large? Kitashit elav libecha, that you should put your heart on him. What he's essentially saying is, he doesn't mean it positively, he means leave me alone. He says, I'm not a monster. Why are you paying attention to me? I'm just a person. Why should you cause bad things to happen to people? Are they worth anything? We're a bunch of little creepy crawlies. Why are you paying attention to us compared to you? It's interesting, by the way, because he's actually recognizing, it's the thing about Eov. As much as he's complaining about God, he also recognizes God's greatness. You, God, are great, so leave me alone. I'm an ant on the middle of an anthill in the middle of, I don't know, some distant country. You have to go out of your way to smush me? I mean, what's in it for you?
We never find out what's in it for him, do we?
No, not really, I don't think.
No.
He's
stirring up all this trouble for this poor guy.
Well, he has.
He never gives him a reason.
You know what's interesting, and I want to tie the idea of the Tanin and the Yam together, and it may be a little bit of a stretch. He says, I think that Eov may be admitting that if there was a Yam or Tanin situation, he can understand being smushed. He's willing to accept that God has a greater plan, but he doesn't see how a little human being such as himself could possibly affect the plan of Earth. And I think what God's trying to say to him is, you're wrong. You're wrong. Human beings are significant creatures, and you do, in fact, affect the plan of Earth. And if I need to wipe you out so that my plan works out for the rest of civilization, then you're toast. It's just the way it works. Sometimes people die for no particular good reason except the fact
he's suffering.
That's
he's
correct.
He's being tortured. For no good reason.
Well, for no good reason. That is, we have the Satan working at the beginning. But God,
I'm the boss. Don't ask questions.
Well, it's to test his purity, actually, to see whether he wouldn't curse against God. You could say that's a reason also. That is, and again, all of this is the story that happened to him is probably a muscle. It's created, so we have to understand what it means. But it could be that God is trying to prove that there is such a thing, that is possible to throw everything and the kitchen sink at somebody. And while a person won't be happy and yell at God, at least he'll still recognize that God is the creator of the universe. And that itself may be a worthwhile test. That may itself may create a situation where civilization can then go on exist. And therefore he is a Yam and a Tanin because he becomes a tool in God's greater plan. People needed to see that Eov could stand up against terrible tortures, the appearance of a no God and still believe in God, not like God, but at least believe in him, and that may have created a situation for the Jews in Babel that they could still believe in God even though their lives seemed like a miserable mess. So in fact, there may be an answer. It could be that when God's saying at the end, where were you when you created the world, that is, you're an idiot and I'm not, that's not what he's saying. He's saying that, you know, I've got a specific measurement here. I've got a very careful ruler stick on which I have civilization exist. And it's for your sake. But you have no idea how I apply that measurement. And unfortunately, you may get stuck under the thumbtack of where God puts down his measurement rods. And that may be what's going on. But I want to finish up the I don't know if that's the answer to the book, but it's possible. Then he says, Manos kitikalenu kitashide lav libecha, vatif gedenu liv karim. You're going to come by occasionally, and you're going to lifkodoto, you're going to have to remember what he does. Lirigaim, and from moment to moment, tivchanenu, you're going to test him. Kama lo tishemi meni, would you please stop looking at me? Lo tishemi meni, stop looking my way. Lo tapeni ad bil'i ruki, until when will you not lighten up on me, until I choke on my vomit or on my spit? That is, I don't have a lot of time here, so leave me alone. You're saying you're looking at me and I'm a dead man, so stop looking. Chatati, even if I did sin, ma efolach notzer adam, how am I going to pay you back? Now the word palech, if you remember, it doesn't mean what is my work. But if you go back to the beginning of chapter 7, this chapter, it says, Halotz vale no shale aretz, a man has a job on earth, kime sachir yamav, this is verse 1 of chapter 7, ke'evin yishaf tzel, like a servant who looks for the shade, kisachir yikaveh pa'alo, like a person who hires out, who waits or hopes for his payment. Pa'alo is not his work, but the payment that you get for your work. So here too, what he's saying is, Chatati, my falach. Let's say I did sin. How can I make it up to you? I'm just human. Notzer Adam, you created the whole humanity. How could I possibly make it up? Lama Samtani Lemifka Lach, why have you made me a target? Lemifka Ve'ehye Alai Lemasa. Now this is weird, because literally translated, it translates as, and I was alive for myself, limasa, for a burden. Why is that weird? Because he's doubly self-referencing. But before I get to that weird verse, I want to mention something interesting about this, which is Tehillim. If you take a look at Tehillim Parakat, you can see the author of Eov is well-versed with Tehillim, except he takes Tehillim and he turns a little bit. So I'll read you Tehillim Parakat, which I have no doubt that you know, because we say it on Yom Kippur, we say it on Chagim, and it's like an Ashrei Tehillim, because it opens and closes with the same part. Ma Adir Shimcha B'chol Aretz, right? We sing that, Ma Adir Shimcha B'chol Aretz, Vaya Hashem Egelecha Kol Aretz, that's what we say. So, it says, Hashem Adonenu, Ma Adir Shimcha B'chol Aretz, nothing is greater, or more powerful, or wondrous than your name in all the land. Asher Tznahu Decha Al Shamayim, that we recognize your name up to the heavens. Mipi olim v'yonkim yisadeta oz. It's a very difficult psukim, but let's go with the easy pshat. That is, as soon as children open up their mouths, this is Tehillim 8, as soon as children open their mouths, your strength is solidified. L'man sorecha l'ashbid oyev v'minakim. I want to continue on to Dalet right now. Ma eresh shamecha ma'asei etzbayecha. What can I possibly see, the things that you place, the things, the workings of your hand? Yareach v'kochavim asher konanta. You made the stars and the moons. This is more creation imagery. Ma enosh ki tizgerenu. Do you see what Eov is quoting? What is man that you should remember him? Uben adam ki tifgedenu. And man that you should remember him. Vatechasreinu ma'at melohim. All you've done is you've just made him a little bit lower than the angels. The kavod hadar ta'atreyu, and you've wrapped man in the honor of who you are. This Tehillim is talking about how wonderful it is that such a lowly life form. We thank you so much for what you've done, because man is unworthy of your hadar, and yet you have given him. What is man that you should remember him? The difference here is it means remember him for tov, that you should do good things. Eov takes these words, these exact same words, and reverses them. Do you see what's going on there? So let's take a look. Utva tifkedenu livkarim v'leregaim tifchanenu ma enosh ki tegadlenu. Why are you making man great? That is, why don't you just forget about him, like birds and bees and all the other creatures? You have to make the whole big sin and punishment thing? We're a bunch of lowly creatures. Leave us alone. Pasuk Chav, I'm not going to get to the last part. The last part, I wanted to talk about the idea of Avon, so I'll just read Pasuk Chav. We'll do Chav Aleph, God willing, next week. It says, Lama shamtani l'mifkalach ve'yeh alai l'masa. This is one of the cases where Chazal say that the author changed the words, and it really is supposed to read, Ve'heyeh alecha limasa, I am to you a burden. That is, he's speaking towards God. But apparently the author felt that that was too nasty towards God, and therefore the words were changed to Ve'heyeh alai limasa, that I should be upon myself as a burden. Now this happens about 7 or 8 times in the Torah, very clear places where instead of saying to you, it says to me. And according to Chazal, again, this is one of these places.
Is that like Lashon Sagi Nahor?
Lashon Sagi Nahor, exactly right.
What's that word?
Sagi Nahor means you have enough light, but we call that's how we refer to blind people. We call them Sagi Nahor, which means you have enough light. It's a way of saying something nice about something, using a nice word instead of saying a negative word, and you understand something from the reverse implication. We pretty much run out of time, so I don't want to go into it too much, but I think that some of the clues here are this the idea of this creationary plus mythological ideas. And then we'll get on to Bildad. Bildad, we'll do the pasuk about what an avon is, and then we'll get on to where Bildad really rips him up to pieces, and then Eov will have a response. I just wanted to get a little feedback from you. I was supposed to, I guess, I don't mind you commenting also, because I just want to get a sense of right and wrong, and I think you may be able to steal